This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. And now, your host, Jonathan Richler.
Good evening, everybody. July 12th. I can't believe it. July 12th. What's going on here? Time keeps on ticking into the future. All right, so we've got 13 cards left. The draw happened approximately 4 minutes ago in the Goulds. This is trending, supposedly, all over the world. Chase the ace in the Goulds. Finally, the Goulds will get recognition for having more than one name in terms of its designation. How many Gouldians will be excited about this versus upset? I don't know. Job to say. Are you out there? How many of you peed on the side of the road? How many rolls of toilet paper were used in the Goulds tonight? Chase the ace is more than you looking to win $700,000 large next week. If no one gets it tonight, it's going to be, who knows, $800,000, $900,000, $1 million. How is the plumbing in the Goulds? Serious question. How many bags of chips were consumed tonight? I heard there was a fish and chip joint that had their workers up as early as 4 a.m. this morning to prepare thousands of pounds of potatoes, which were to be hand-cut. You eat all those potatoes, you're going to have to find a bathroom. I can't help but think of our friend who calls in from Brigus to discuss the porta-potty situation during the Blueberry Festival when you're looking at 10 to 20,000 people who congregate. Goulds, how does your garden flow? In all seriousness, let's think about human bodily functions and hanging out in a place where you don't live for 12 hours with all the hopes of earning scads of cash. And folks, if I didn't work in the evening, I would certainly be there too. I would be there with bells on. And in fact, maybe I'll find some sort of proxy to get there and we'll throw in some dollars next week. Maybe we'll even spring for a porta potty. Hey, what do you think, producer Patrick Myler? Because you got to think, like, you got to respect the property. And this fellow who called in, his name escapes me at the moment, and I apologize, sir, because we've had some significant heart-to-hearts. But this gentleman who perhaps his name is Tom, lives in Brigus for most of his life. He's in his 80s, and he's slightly ticked off over the amount of human traffic that congregates in certain areas, in this case Brigus, historic, clean, gorgeous little town, to eat blueberries, drink beer, and, you know, park your sailboat and do whatever. Have a fish fry. Eat some gorgeous clotted cream on your scone. Do what you got to do. Buy a wallet from the hands of Olsen. You know, some cotton candy from so-and-so. What is the damage to the town when everyone leaves? So the Blueberry Festival is once a year. Chase the Ace is once a week. I'm not being a negative Nardwar. I'm just wondering about the other implications that no one seems to talk about. So let's talk about it. You're stuck in traffic. You're trying to get out of the Goulds right now. Call in to VOCM Nightline, 273-521. I want to hear from you. You are out there. You have experienced all of it. Perhaps you saw a bunch of people super excited. High school reunions are no doubt happening all across the Goulds. It's a wonderful place. There's lots of human energy. There's also lots of bodily functions. I want to talk about all of that. I want to know what the repercussions and the implications are of having that many of us in one area where it may or may not have been designed to do so. I want to talk about the fact that there are first responders, paramedics, Royal Newfoundland Constabulary congregating in one part of our municipality to ensure public safety. What about the rest of us? To me, this is an ample opportunity, a perfect time for those skeets, and as Bill Rowe used to say, sleevings, to go out and find a window to smash. Know what I'm saying? Because there's no one else looking. They're all monitoring everyone who is looking to chase the ace. All right, I'm done. I just thought we should talk about the other aspect of it. Am I an idiot? Am I looking for the negative? No, I'm just looking for the bodily functions. And I think that's something that always fascinates me, and therefore I'm wondering. And you know what? In light of people calling to complain yesterday that the city staff of St. John's are barbarians because they forgot to unlock the door at Bannerman Park, well, everybody pees. Therefore, it's news. Does it? That's all I'm saying. All right, what else? I hear, and we've been having some emails back and forth about the proposal to shut down a taxi stand dispatch on Empire Avenue where a garage already exists. Interesting. I'd like to see the original application to see what the confusion is about. I've sort of lost a little bit of confidence in the city of St. John's, only so far as it's recently come to light that it's taken the city council and bureaucracy 6 bleeping years to approve or decide on the policy to have new home developments have a tree planted on their property, 1 if not 2. Apparently it took 6 years for this to go through. That level of bureaucratic ineptitude scares me. So with respect to some lady or fella forgetting to unlock the bathroom door, that's peanuts as far as I'm concerned. What do you say? You want to have your say? You know what to do. Pick up the phone. Give us a chat right now. We're not going. No, we're not. Oh, well, she's there, but she's not available. So we'll talk to Jerry Lynn Mackey in a moment. Congratulations to the folks who have decided to inject a little bit of business acumen into an historic property at 55 Rennie's Mill Road. It's a 12,000 square foot home, and I think it was sold recently for about $2 million. This is great. It's not being destroyed. It's being repurposed, and it is supposed to be office spaces, and it might actually have some living space in it as well. It's great. I love it. Apparently, people are complaining about this. There are several heritage homes in and around town that have been repurposed and are being reused for similar purposes. There are churches all around the bay. There are old schools, convents, you name it, that are being used for something for which they were not originally designed. But that is how we save our heritage, I think. It's great. I can't wait to walk through 55 Rennie's Mill to see what it's all about. I believe I spent 1 or 2 afternoons in that house at one point in my life as a young kid. Someone I knew lived there. I don't know who. Can't remember. But I'm looking at the house. Looks very familiar. Kind of looks like the house that I grew up in. It was huge. It was the best place to play hide and seek or have a water fight. Don't tell mom or dad. Just ask any of our friends, myself and my sister Devorah. We had a blast in that house. 26 rooms. It's now known as Compton House. It's a bed and breakfast. It's repurposed. The kitchen that my parents designed is now a teaching kitchen used by my friend Laurie McCarthy and her small business Cod Sounds. This is a perfect example of how to take an ancient house, formerly owned by Chess Pippi, I believe, before my parents took possession in the mid-70s. Ancient, beautiful, secret passages, all cool stuff. And the folks who own it are part of, I think, the Leaside Group, and they've repurposed and renovated and reused, recycled old dusty junks of houses like mine, where I grew up in. Now they are something else. So it's beautiful. So congratulations to those in Rennie's Mill Road. We're going to hopefully look at this as an opportunity for business, redesign, etc. I think it's great. And to those who are complaining about this fact, I don't know what to say. I really don't. But if you want to talk to me tonight about that, let's do it. There was some sort of messaging bleep or bloop that just happened here in the studio. None of my devices are turned on, so I'm not sure what that is. So if anyone is calling in and that noise happens again, do not be alarmed. I am providing you with my full attention. It just seems that there's a device that's left here somewhere in the room that's making noises. Producer Patrick Myler, where am I going? Line 1 or line 2? Give me some indication as to what I'm doing. Line number 2, we're going to speak with Jose Rivera of the Refugee Immigrant Advisory Council. Good evening to you, sir.
Good evening to you, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm fantabulous. I'm enjoying this wonderful summer. Mm-hmm. That's why I keep saying, you know, that I here in Newfoundland feel at home.
That's great. I'm glad that you do feel like home.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. What is not to love? And listening to you guys to talk about business and development and repurposing and all that, brings to my attention a couple of situations that has, you know, developed quite, you know, a few days ago and today even, that got us a little bit worried.
Okay.
You know that what we do here at REAC, the Refugee and Immigrant Advisory Council, is that we help people, anybody that comes to our door with any kind of issue that they can have, anything from, of course, immigration, firstly, and then education, health, family issues, property, you name it, employment and business. We have been helping people here to go around the idea of developing their own businesses, so we had to study a little bit of this and that, you know, about restaurants, B&Bs, little industries, carpentries, so on and so forth. Going around that, we found a little business that is in rural Newfoundland.
Oh.
It is in Global Down. It is called Splash and Put.
Splash and Put, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an old one, really old business. I wasn't, you know, able to go there a couple of times that we took people to, you know, the Terranova Park, but we love to go there. And we're planning to do a little bit outing to that place one day. So we came across that business and the things that are happening to them that coincidentally are things that are happening to other businesses that we have been trying to research for our members. So in this particular case, the business was shut. A number of hours today, losing a lot of money because they didn't have a lifeguard. And they didn't have a lifeguard because there are no lifeguards available in the market.
When we say splash, is it a swimming pool? Is it a wading pool?
Yeah, that's a swimming pool. There is this beautiful toboggan, as you call it, the water slide.
Oh, cool. Thing,
right? So we learned that legislation here is so complicated that the water slide regulation is after the elevators regulation. So if you want to build one of those water slides, you have to learn how to regulate elevators, which I don't think that matched, right?
What?
So imagine that. Not to our surprise. And then you can have a cabin, you know, a set of cabins around or a motel and have a nice swimming pool.
Okay.
And there are no regulations for that swimming pool. But if you have a swimming pool like the Splash and Put, then there's a lot sort of regulations that come in place.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a hotel that have 200 guests, there are no regulations for that one because it's an indoor swimming pool. But if you have a spot like this one or the marine park out in Push Cove or another one that is in the East Coast, there's a lot of regulations going on to them. So we really have had a big problem in this province to get our newcomers to identify how to go about business, how to get, you know, people to work for them. Say that this business problem today arises because lack of lifeguards. And if you want to train people, it's expensive. And there's no way for you in a seasonal business to keep a trained person for years and years. They might move on. So there's some issues there that doesn't apply for one sector of the same business, tourism, because that's just tourism.
Okay, speaking of tourism and business, I just need to interrupt you for one moment.
Yeah,
breaking news. The 50-50 number for the Chase the Ace. Ticket number 870-260. 870-260. This is a winnings of, if I read this correctly, $162,515. So the 50-50 ticket, 870-260. All right, let's continue our conversation about business and tourism.
Hundreds of thousands there.
Yeah, you can build a lot of splash pads with that.
We can build a lot of those. So trying to help our friends here to build their businesses, we come across these experiences, right? And we are really confused. That's why one of the big problems in our province, retention, is so low. Because when we're trying to identify business opportunities, we stumble upon this kind of example. No local business, a small business, can survive when the government is not helping with clear regulation. something that is regulated this year, next year could be something else because somebody comes and say, no, you cannot have guests around the pool because this section of the pool is closed.
Kind of like putting a $5,000 tax on icebergs.
Right?
Yeah.
So everything has to be like, you know, St. John's and icebergs, and then rural Newfoundland cannot develop important businesses because regulation is not that clear.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really having trouble around, you know, trying to encourage our friends to build businesses. You have the example of Muhammad Ali and his wonderful restaurant. All the trouble that he had to go through until he found this little spot on Gower Street and Douglas Street.
Yeah, I remember the problems with his mobile unit, and he had an electric unit as opposed to a propane unit, and he couldn't hook it up anywhere. Yeah,
wanted to come down to work for 3 hours to connect those wires because it was, you know, bureaucracy here and there.
Yeah.
Now they managed to expand their business, and now they open another, you know, Muhammad Ali on Water Street. But that is a successful event for people that stubbornly insisted, right? But now we have these other Aladdin guys that had this wonderful hookah business that, you know, got shut down with nobody coming to talk to them, asking them what was the actual business.
Yeah, well, the business was, I respectfully disagree there. Those folks are wonderful people, but they were in the business of selling the time for tobacco. It was a shisha house, and has regulations under health.
Yeah.
Our health department. We have to sum up here because we have to go to the break. But listen, I do have to say one thing: the issues with getting a license to handle propane for a mobile food unit. The reason they exist is for public safety. The reason why there are regulations around splash and putt pads is because there is water involved and potential of death.
Absolutely.
So,
but if you apply for one business, the idea is that it be, you know, fair for everybody and clear regulation. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that a little bit deeper because we're just speaking about vagaries here. But Jose, let's send me some information and we can discuss this further, okay? We do have to go to the break, but I appreciate you bringing this to our attention.
No problem.
Okay, my friend.
Okay. Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Good night to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. You too.
All right.
Okay.
We're going to go to the break. Once again, 870-260 is the number for the 50-50 ticket. $162,500. Congratulations to whoever has that number. And I'm pretty sure I lent you 10 bucks today. All right. We're here. We're talking to Jerry Lynn Mackey right after the break. Stay with you.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
All right. Welcome back to the program. It's going to be a very interesting show right now. We're going to the Goulds. We're going to be speaking with Jerry Lynn Mackey. Jerry Lynn, are you swarmed by Acers? What's going on? And that, folks, is what happens when you have 20,000 people using their cell phones in the Goulds, which cannot accommodate the traffic. Poor Jerry Lynn was on the phone waiting on hold for hours. Minutes. And there you go. That's what happened. All right. Anyway, if anyone has any other information about the regulations about needing to be an elevator operator in order to operate a water slide, I'd be very curious and very anxious and eager to learn more about that situation that Jose Rivera was trying to fill us in on. I do have a crucial bit of information, and that is that the number for the ACE number, is that right, Patrick? Is that how I pronounce it? Does that mean that the ace was drawn? Oh, so what does it mean if I'm calling it an ace number? Oh, I see. So they get to draw for the ace. Ticket number 1329997 gets to go up and draw for the ace. You have a 1 in 13 chance of becoming a 100,000-aire. 1329997. 1329997. If I helped you in any way, I can go to sleep a little bit happier tonight. Good luck to you, whoever owns that card, that ticket number. You're going to get up there and draw and see if you will become Newfoundland and Labrador's next upper middle class, I suppose you could say, and good for you. Congratulations. I hope whoever it is has a lot of fun. Scrotty is on the scene. Follow along at VOCM Nightline. Shows me a parking lot full of people. There are no tailgate parties, though. Looks like the Tim Hortons parking lot is blocked, as is the Irving. I can see the SO and the Home Hardware. Everyone seems to be busy. Hopefully, everybody gets out safe in the cold once the card is drawn. Darren Jane says, the light bulb just came on. We can pay for Muskrat with a permanent Chase the Ace lottery at the Confederation Building. I think I heard a similar idea from my buddy John Rich, who was saying that we could have one ace, three decks of cards, province-wide, Chase the Ace. All funds go to paying down the debt for Muskrat Falls. Wouldn't that be... Well, I think that would be great. And why don't we? Why don't we come up with some clever fundraisers at the same time where we can celebrate our own ingenuity and adversity in the face of power bills, which will be more expensive? Why can't we figure out amongst ourselves, just like we're not waiting for anyone else to find us work or find us way to, you know, landscape your property, find a new place to put your whatever, your object of desire, I guess is what I'm saying. We don't need government to give us a horizon. We don't need government to create for us a lottery that where we can all contribute to Muskrat Falls' debt payments beyond, you know, Set for Life and stuff like that. I contributed at least $8 last weekend to the government pot. But in the meantime, why don't we come up with a clever contest where we can at least raise $1 million? I mean, that's back in the day, I think at the height of expenditures, that was what was being spent on site. I remember hearing some crazy calculations. But if we could do a fundraiser, I don't know, once or twice a month to help pay down a debt for all of us, because there's a lot of us who won't be able to afford power bills, which will, rumors have it, double, etc. Wouldn't that be a good thing to do? What do you think, folks? Should we, as a population, try and help everyone get a little leg up? Yeah. Interesting question of the day today. Are you planning on spending your summer vacation here or elsewhere? And I think this is a very strong indication of what we were just talking about, and you know, the fact that we're all trying to pinch our pennies. 34% of voters, and there are almost 4,000 of you, decided to vote that they're spending their vacation at home. 24% of you are not only staying at home, you're going to travel somewhere else around the province. So that's great. Only 10% are going to leave to go to the mainland, 10% out of the country. 24%, this is funny, say, what vacation? And fair enough, boys. Fair enough. I got 2 weeks coming to me. I'm taking the first week of August and the third. Third week, I'm going to Burlington, Newfoundland, Labrador. Going to take part in The Gathering, which is a comedy, music, and food festival. Can't wait. I've never been to that part of the island, so very much looking forward to that. So that's kind of a work vacation. It's definitely a staycation. But the first week of August, I don't know what to do. I got a couple of books I'm going to read that I want to read. I got a cousin who's coming to visit for a writer's festival up in Gros Morne. We're going to hopefully spend some time together. Or I could say shag it and go visit Mutter in Toronto. Not sure. I don't know how I would answer this question of the day. I really don't. I would love to stay here. It's the beautiful weather in August. The bounty is everywhere in terms of produce and friends and family. August is where everyone seemingly comes back from their vacation. They're there. They're still in vacation mode, and therefore they like to have long, leisurely lunches or do some yard work. Maybe I can help someone build a treehouse. I don't know. Maybe I'll even go to Mount Pearl for a day. Do a little outing over there. Just kidding. But in all seriousness, I would love to just stay here. And why don't I? Maybe Mom should come here and see me. Right? There you go. Problem solved. We're going to go to line number one. We're talking to a fellow who had a vacation recently and now is working hard at it, both at the taxi stand and on figuring out what the prices of oil and gas are. George Murphy, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm not bad. How about you?
I'm trying to figure a few things out. One, did anyone get my offer to split the 50-50 ticket tonight? And two, where I'm going to go and what books I'm going to read in August. Dilemmas, right?
Yeah, that's quite a dilemma. But there you go. That's all you can do.
My cousin Noah just recently wrote a book called The Candidate, and it's his story of being a federal candidate in the last election. He was an NDP candidate in Ontario.
Yeah.
And I really want to read it. And, you know, take some time to read things like that. So I think that's what I'm going to dig into. And, yeah, it's, you know what that's like.
Yeah, and I read a lot myself. And, you know, any chance I get. And one of the books I got, scraped it off the shelf again the other day, is about the Norman Gladys. Gary Cranford's book out from years ago. It must be about the fifth time that I've read it. But the whole boat still intrigues me. And
what's it called?
And it's the Norman Gladys.
Norman Gladys. Okay.
Yeah. I guess you could say Newfoundland and Labrador at one time had his very own blue nose, for at least for a short time in the mid-70s to the early 80s. And Gary Cranford got quite a little historical book on it. And I had an opportunity to stay for a couple of days under Norman Gladys and took a short trip on her.
He's a good writer, that guy.
Yeah, and anyway, it always intrigued me how come Newfoundland and Labrador doesn't have his own tall ship. And at one time it did, and we don't anymore. You know, not like Nova Scotia has. Nova Scotia, of course, has the Blue Nose, and the Blue Nose too. And, of course, we never went that route, so we still miss something, I think, from our seafaring heritage. But anyway, I took that book down off the shelf again today, and I started reading it. It's a great little book if anybody's out there looking for it. I'm pretty sure you can find it in most bookstores and everything. I think it's still being published. You'll have to ask Gary Cranford next time you're talking to him. But the idea of Newfoundland and Labrador having its own boat again, I don't know why. I've always had that in the back of my mind. Huh. But it is. You know, we're missing a piece of our heritage. And for some reason, I dragged that book down off the shelf again and just had to go through it.
Well, that's a story of something that was supposed to be a success and then turned into a disaster, right? It was supposed to be a floating museum, and it couldn't stand up on the ocean, as I recall.
Well, yeah, it started off as a disaster because I guess you could say, the boat had a nice, proud history anyway. It was launched in mid-May of 1945, and she was built down in Trinity Bay. And she was bought by the provincial government and had some federal assistance on that. And she was supposed to make the trip to Okinawa via the Panama Canal, and, of course, she never made it. And then, of course, they changed the itinerary to make it a trip through some of the Mediterranean and European capitals, seagoing ports, if you will.
Okay.
And she ended up in Ireland, and then, of course, she sailed across. And, of course, when she came into St. John's Harbor, I think everybody remembers it. It was quite a momentous occasion, and I think it was probably one of the minister, Tom Hickey, at the time. I think it was minister of tourism at the time.
Good God.
It was, you're going a long ways back now. And anyway, it was, I guess it was one of his crowning achievements and something for which everybody remembers him by. But Gary Cranford, like I said, wrote a pretty good book on it. Nice little historical, easy read. And it's one of these stories, I think, that a lot of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians still think about, too, at the same time. And, you know, there's your piece of history there. The Norman Gladys used to work in the fishery off the coast of Labrador. And, of course, in the Newfoundland waters, and then plied around to various communities and everything, delivering goods and services for a time, and pretty much met her end when the province bought her, I guess, and saved her for a few more years. And she came around, I think it was 1984 that we actually lost her in Placentia Bay. So there's a little piece of Newfoundlandia for you, but never too early to grab a book off the shelf. And summertime is a great time to do it. I've done it, and I'm doing it again. And I'm always reading anyway. So
George Murphy's doing it.
George Murphy's doing it, yeah.
You're the new Reading Rainbow.
Well, I don't know about that, but maybe I'll have to come out with a book review every week now after this one.
You know, it's not a bad idea. I was thinking of doing a book club segment.
Yeah, and, you know, like I said, it's not a bad idea. Sometimes it's just nice to turn off the computers and the TV and everything, too, and just pick up a book. And I'd like to call it giving yourself a reminder. Most of the stuff I read and everything is usually, you know, historical items, militaria, if you will, military history and everything. Mm-hmm. The story of people is big with me, too, at the same time as you would know.
Yeah.
And, you know, past events kind of stick to me, and I just have to keep on reading about it. And
I've taken a break from nonfiction. I spent several years reading up on genocides, and you know, that's it. That's a segment of history that not a lot of people will spend time with or within. But a good decade of my life was reading about mass murder, and not in any of that serial killer stuff. But in essence, it is a form of patterns, and the pattern is mass murder, but it's orchestrated murder, and it gripped me like nobody's business. So now I'm back in the land of other types of plots of evil and goodness, and read the old Game of Thrones like everybody did over the past few years, and now I'm on to some science fiction, which is what I used to do when I was a teenager, and I'm loving it. But there's got to be a few things in there too.
Can't get into the Game of Thrones at all. I don't know what the infatuation is with some people out there, but that's one series that I still can't get into.
It's basically Days of Our Lives with swords. what I do enjoy about the first couple of books, anyway, before it gets all silly with magic, is he describes what they eat and medieval food and medieval cooking is a hobby of mine. I cook a lot of things in cast iron and slow cook it in open fires, and it really, I don't know, he might have had an influence on me. I used to read his books in the 80s. He wrote about a series of people that survived a virus that came from outer space. The series was called Wild Cards. Basically, 95% of the Earth's population dies, and the other 5% either mutates into some gross, blobby type form, or they become superheroes. They're either jokers or racists. And so it follows a bunch of people who had characters in a role-playing game. George R.R. Martin and Roger Zelazny and a bunch of other old classic sci-fi writers from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, they all had these characters that they developed over a series of books which were short stories. And there's really, really cool characters. And that's how I knew George R.R. Martin. So when that Game of Thrones stuff came out, I said, I'll give it a go. And it was cool. I got into it because I could see his old writing style. But then when he started to describe the stuff that they were eating, I was hooked.
I think that, depending on the author you're reading, if you're into that one particular author and you read him an awful lot, you tend to catch on to the writing style and everything. And that is, I think that that's part of an attraction to a book anyway.
Me too.
A lot of military stuff that I have, small paperback novels, thick small paperback novels by Martin Caden, for example, on aviation history. Mm-hmm. Particularly during World War II, and just finished off one book, The Ragged Rugged Warriors, for example. It was an old publication, but still gone through that one. Very easy read, easily understood and everything like that, and got used to his writing, started collecting his books. I got a massive collection of his books, I think, and he was a prolific writer on military history and other forms of aviation too, and I'm really into his writing.
So they become like a family member. I read every darn word, essay, book, and novella that Frank Herbert ever wrote. For example, the guy that did Dune. Most of it was garbage, but a lot of it was, the small majority was wonderful stuff. The rest was schlock from the 70s. But I don't know. I read it all. I became obsessed. Let's talk about something that obsesses you before we go to the break, and that's oil and gas.
I don't know if it's about if it's an obsession. I got it down to about 7 minutes a day, I suppose, probably about 15 years ago. So sometimes I can pretty much tune it out, except for, for 23 hours and 53 minutes in the run of a day, I can at least tune it out. And then for 7 minutes, bang, I'm at it. And then, of course, every Tuesday night I end up putting together a press release and review some of the news over the week and everything, and remember some details that I talked about 6 months before that might be happening in the market. Now it's affecting the market now. So I guess this week is really no different. And for year number 20, in addition, whatever it is, whatever number press release it is out that I've had once a week times 20 years, I guess you could say there's probably about 1,000 press releases that I put out. Again, it's Tuesday night, I put out another press release, but it was short and sweet, no market details or anything, because I was dying to get out to the fire pit with the kids, have a game of Spotlight with them. That's what I did. So I didn't put down any market details. I think my Facebook post was probably a little bit longer, but it was a little bit lighthearted and bouncy, and I just threw the numbers out to everybody, let them go with it. So anyway, that was it. There was no change in gasoline prices projected for this week, just to start things off. There was really not much happening out there in the markets. A little bit of volatility. The price of oil was up 1 minute and then down the next, and pretty much averaged the same for a negligible change in the price of a barrel of oil. But we did see some rise and decrease, more so a decrease in refined commodities this week when it came to the distillate end of things. And all those numbers came out the same pretty much. Heating oil, stove oils, and diesels all down by 1.1 cents a liter. Not a big lot. But tiny. At the same time, with gasoline, with the upwards pressure on gasoline, nothing is changing with gasoline this week. It probably would have been downwards, except this is not winter, and demand is up a little bit, but it's still not as strong as what it was this time last year or the year before. It's one of the weakest years now in the last five that I've seen for gasoline demand. And again, no big pressures here, but you know what you're seeing at the pump right now is probably what you're going to see at the pump after midnight when prices are set. So there's nothing critical there. The outlook for the summer is still what you see is what you get. The one thing that we're going to be watching out for now in the next week, of course, everybody saw the news today, a quarter of a point, the percentage point increase in the base rate. That increased the value of the Canadian dollar, and the Canadian dollar is one thing that I use in order to figure out my numbers. The Canadian dollar pretty much gained a penny overnight, and that probably would mean if spot prices stayed the same for the next week as what it did this week, it would be pretty much a savings of a penny at the pumps. So something like that is almost critical when it comes to seeing the effect on the Canadian dollar rising against the U.S. So it's going to be interesting now to watch that in the next little while. Duh. Some people will be totally bored with it, but I'm enamored with it, and that's all you can say about it. But the simple fact is that while your mortgages may be going up a bit, and there might be some consternation as regards to the cause against somebody's personal debt load, there are other ways, too, that, you know, a rise in the Canadian dollar can save consumers a penny, too, as a result. So over the long term, that might be a more substantial number than even what you're losing, say, for example, on your mortgage. But still, mortgage rates going up as a result, not necessarily a good thing. And, you know, certainly it deems worth watching, of course, with the heavy debt load that most Canadians have these days.
Definitely. It certainly isn't getting any lighter on my end, I can tell you that much.
Well,
George, we do have to go. We're a few minutes over for the break here, but thank you for informing us about some good things that we need to read, as well as what's happening in terms of energy, and at least it's somewhat good news. It's teeny tiny good news that things are going down. Thanks for your time, sir.
And again, summertime, you're looking at a time of the year when, well, peak of the summer now, certainly for sure for travelers. But the simple fact is no change in price. So that tells you exactly where demand is right now. It's not strong at all with the way prices are staying steady here right now.
Mm-hmm.
Have yourself a good night, sir, and enjoy another book.
Yeah, I will do.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Talk to you later.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
See you now. Bye.
All right, we're going to go to the break. We'll be right back.
Call now, 273-5211, or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to go to line number one. We're speaking with Bob. How you doing, Bob?
Not too bad, buddy.
What's on the float?
Well, I heard your comment about the government raising funds by doing Chasey Ace to bring down the deficit.
Yeah.
So I sort of kind of agree. I think where our government has gone wrong, I hate to say this, is that sometimes maybe you need to run government like a business.
Okay.
So You've got everyone in Newfoundland runs out, jackpot on Lotto Max goes up $60 million. They have record-breaking sales. Everyone runs out to buy a ticket, 2 tickets, 10 tickets. Businesses get involved, employees, and on she goes. And the money just bills and bills and bills.
Mm. That's part of the business the government engages in, though, right?
Yeah, but not enough.
Okay.
Right? So you brought up the point about introducing something like Chase the Ace twice a month.
Yeah.
They don't get into that.
Right, because it's gambling.
Ex-
Except that they support gambling.
So you got two options. Either run Chase the Ace, government promoted, twice a month, like you said, or open a casino. Dress code, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And we know that's been shot down multiple times. Or just keep going and tax gas, tax booze, tax cigarettes, get rid of vape. Do it all.
Vape is not removed. It's just that if you don't have a license to sell tobacco, you can't sell vaping.
Exactly. And nicotine is taxed.
Oh, yeah. It certainly is, and it should be.
Right?
As an ex-smoker, I totally support the tobacco tax. What the hell is that?
Oh, me too. And I do smoke. Yeah. I don't want to, but it's more expensive to get off it than it is to stay on it.
Bob, I'll tell you the two cheapest ways to stop smoking. This is what mostly worked for me. Water, and every time you really have a craving, get out and walk around the block.
Yeah, I don't walk and I drink beer.
Oh.
No, they're getting me on both ends. And I buy my Lotto Max tickets once a week, and I go to JCA's. So, you know, you got gambling versus taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Taxes anger people,
mm-hmm.
indulge more in the gambling, and everyone will be okay with it. Because everyone loves to gamble. They hate to give their dollars to the government.
Yes, they certainly do. I'm not a fan of that myself. I'm also not a fan of this noise that keeps popping up in my studio here. You have my full attention. I don't know why. Someone left a device in here that is messaging someone else. It's not me. Bob, I'm talking to you. You're talking to me. That's all that's important. And there's at least three other people out there. Hi, Mom, that are listening to our conversation. Listen, gambling is sanctioned by the government, and so are sins, because they are taxed. And by that, all I'm saying is sin tax, right? That's what tobacco tax and alcohol tax are lovingly referred to. I'm not getting into any religious or theological debate here.
No, it's just a vice.
Right, it's a vice. And gambling is certainly something that government takes advantage of. That, I think, and the royalties from oil are probably what keeps this province running. So why not, by extension? And I was sort of being sarcastic and following the lead of a brilliant and funny man, John Rich, who suggested that we have a triple deck with one ace, Chase the Ace province-wide, to raise money to pay down the Muskrat Falls debt. I think it's brilliant.
It is. Should also take back the $1.something million that they gave to the guy they got rid of, but that's another topic. We're hearing on news every day about Donald Trump and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump got in to run the United States as a business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think had he not been distracted with everything else and the foolishness that he's getting on with,
mm-hmm.
might be successful. Ross Perot back in the day, an oil guy, he wasn't getting in to take care of the American people. He was getting in to make money for the United States.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's time, especially Newfoundland, being, you know, 12 years ago, 8 years ago, being a have-not province,
right?
And then end up in the crapper. There's something major wrong, and I think people start to need to sit back and start to look at these things. Where is all the money going? Everyone's complaining about taxes going up. Do something different. Outside the box, guys. Outside the box.
I think you are onto something. And I just received a message from my good buddy, Laurel Ann, who's listening in from Ottawa, Ontario. So that makes at least five people who are listening to us.
There we go.
Bob, every one of us is a winner.
Well, I didn't win Chase the Ace tonight. So, and I still got to pay taxes. So,
listen, there's always next week, hey?
There is, absolutely.
Listen, good luck with your battle. It's a hard one, and I'm referring to tobacco. It's a challenge, buddy. One of the things that really got me through, besides walking, is every time I had a serious craving, I'd give myself a Charlie horse.
Yeah, no, I'm not doing that.
And it went away. And, you know, it was a stupid way to do it, but you only had to do it once or twice. And then you found an alternate way, and that's how I started walking. A, to walk off the Charlie horse. and B, yeah, because it was smarter.
You can't get rid of self-abuse with another form of self-abuse.
Well, it's just a little tap to yeah, get you over the... You're right. Love it, Bob. Great conversation. You have a good night, sir.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Talk to you. Bye-bye. Yeah, a little bit of punchy punch on the muscle certainly takes away a nicotine craving. Patrick Myler, you know what to do. Do you have Facebook open in your room? Someone's telling me that it's Facebook that's making those noises. Someone's Facebook messaging is coming through in my studios. You tell that person, whoever it is, to get off Facebook. Stop looking at photos of cats and hamburgers. I'm done. We're going to the news. We'll be right back.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the program. We're going to go to line number one, and we're speaking with Chandra Kavanaugh. How are you, Chandra?
I'm doing very well, Jonathan. How are you?
Good, thank you. Is it Chandra or Chandra?
Chandra.
Is it?
It is.
My apologies. Chandra?
No trouble.
Nice to speak with you, and thank you for helping me with the pronunciation. I know both a Chandra and a Chandra. That's why I had to ask.
Yeah, my name's an unusual one.
It's a lovely one.
Oh, thank you.
The reason why we don't know how to pronounce certain names is because they're uncommon, and that makes it all the more wonderful to hear them and learn. That's what it is to be part of a interesting and diverse society. And, you know, we can't all be named John. Some
That's
of us are.
True. And community building is what we're all about. So it's exciting to hear that.
Fantastic. So we have something that we're going to be learning about tonight. And I think over the next few weeks, you're at the St. John's Women's Center. And you are part of a feminist working hub. Very excited to find out what the dickens this is all about.
Oh, absolutely. So this is part of my role as feminist in residence for the St. John's Baptist Women's Council.
Okay.
So I host the Feminist Working Hub, which happens at 170 Cashin Avenue every Monday from 12 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
And the Working Hub is a co-working space. So that gives people who typically work on their own an opportunity to work with others. So this could be people who work from home, people who work remotely, small business owners, graduate students, stay-at-home parents, or just people who want to get away from the office and be inspired by new ideas and new surroundings.
Okay, so why is it a feminist working hub as opposed to a working hub? Can you explain to me the difference between the two, please?
So it's a feminist working hub insofar as, first of all, there's plenty of feminists around. Mm-hmm. It's the St. John's Status of Women Council, so that's one of our focuses. I'm a feminist, and I'm the person who runs it. I'm a professional feminist as well as sort of a personal feminist activist. And we invite all sorts of people from all sorts of different walks of life who have lots of different social justice-based interests to come and work with us.
Okay. So anyone who would consider themselves a feminist could attend your sessions.
Absolutely. And even if you don't consider yourself a feminist, we'd love to have you
even
and
better.
Convince you.
Yeah. I love it. This is great. You're a PhD candidate, yes?
I am.
Okay. And what are you studying?
So my field is biomedical ethics, but feminist philosophy has always been a deep interest of mine. So my take on biomedical ethics definitely has a feminist lens.
Oh, wow. Okay. So who are you studying in terms of philosophy when it comes to ethics and biomedical ethics?
So all kinds of different people. Biomedical ethics is one of those sort of funny fields in philosophy where we don't necessarily have pet philosophers the
right.
way that a metaphysician might really love Immanuel Kant, for example. But I do have a few philosophers that I work with quite regularly. So Gadamer would be one.
Right.
Iris Marion Young would be another. Richard Rorty would be another. So those kind of thinkers. I love pragmatists. Anybody who's sort of sensible and down to earth, I love to read.
Fantastic. I'm super excited. You're reminding me of a couple courses I have taken and passed with Dr. Arthur Croker, who was a student of... Harold Innes and Mercer McLuhan, so he's a postmodernist.
Oh.
And we did a lot of feminist theory and technology. And there's one woman's name who escapes me, but she did a lot on
biomedical ethics and cyborg theory out of California. And darn it all, her name escapes me, but when I do recall what it is, I will contact you and let you know, because there was some great stuff. And biomedical ethics is quite a field, but I love the idea of being a professional feminist. I mean, this is something that I would like to see on many people's resumes. What exactly do you consider it to be, or how would you write down your job description as a professional feminist?
So I think a professional feminist is something that you kind of, that you build up over time, because a lot of the opportunities are unpaid opportunities, especially at first. So, for instance, I volunteered with the magazine, the feminist magazine, McClung's Magazine, and that's where I got a lot of experience with writing and editing. And then as you build up your kind of social justice resume, you get more and more people who offer you these professional opportunities. So I find that it's a bit of a slow process, and you have to be willing to dedicate your time and energy, maybe in an unpaid way at first.
Right.
But it's developing those connections that allow you to become a professional feminist.
Stellar. I love this idea. I can't wait to learn more. So you're available for a few nights over the next few weeks to tell us more about this initiative, not only the Feminist Working Hub, but perhaps we can expand on your role within the Status of Women Council. Any teasers you'd like to put out there for our listeners, or would you be encouraging questions from our audience as well?
I would definitely encourage questions. I always encourage questions. Mm-hmm. I'd encourage everyone who can to come out to the Feminist Working Hub. And I'd also say that I'm running a 5-week series of workshops, which started last week.
Okay.
And the next one is tomorrow night from 7 to 9 at 170 Cashin Avenue. And we're going to be talking about feminism, love, and sex. So it should be a really interesting workshop.
Oh, wow. So this is primarily Monday afternoons from 1 to 4 p.m.
So Monday afternoons from 1 to 4 is the Feminist Working Hub, where we all get together and do our work together.
Right.
And Thursday nights from 7 to 9, that's the series of workshops.
Okay. Chandra, please feel free to send us the links to at VOCM Nightline, and I would be more than happy to forward that information to the at least 100 people who are actual human beings that follow the Nightline account. And for the rest, well, you might have a bunch of robots that show up. We'll find out, I suppose.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you for this. And listen, great conversation. I look forward to learning more about you and your work, not only at the Status of Women Council and the Women's Center, but on your PhD, because that sounds absolutely fascinating. I love biomedical ethics. It's something that my sister is involved in at a professional level, and it's something that never gets old around the table when you discuss the ethics of your body. You know, government legislates us from the cradle to the grave, but there are so many areas that we can discuss in and outside of the bureaucracy. Looking forward to it. Pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, Jonathan, and I look forward to talking with you next week.
Fantastic. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. So that's happening tomorrow night at the St. John's Status of Women Council, the workshop itself. But Mondays are the working hubs. Now, what do you think about that? A professional feminist. What a obvious idea. And why is it taking so long? It's one of those things where you just sort of slap yourself on the forehead with an open-faced palm. And you say, why didn't we think of that earlier? We're going to go to line number two. We're speaking with Kira Codner, who's all the way in glorious Torbay. I suppose you're in Torbay. Are you, Kira?
I'm absolutely in Torbay.
Wicked. Has the sun gone down over there yet?
We got a beautiful red sky tonight. I'm just sat at Traditional Coffee House.
Lovely. Traditional Coffee House, the famous fish cakes that Craig Scott brought in here one night for Municipal Mondays came from that joint. They were fantastic.
They are delicious. I'd highly recommend them.
So let's talk about a time in Torbay. It's happening, goodness gracious, this Saturday.
Well, our festival actually starts on Friday. So it is, we've had some pre-festival activities last weekend, but things are ramping up starting on Friday.
Well, let's talk about it. What's happening on Friday and which ones are your, I think I recall what your favorite event is, but you refresh my memory, please.
So on Friday, we are having our senior social with afternoon tea. That's going to be from 2 to 4 at the Kingston Center. We do strongly encourage an advance ticket. And then in the evening, we have our UV glow dance. There's actually two dances. one from 6:30 to 8 p.m. for ages kindergarten to grade 3, another from 8:30 to 10 p.m. for grade 4 to 6, and that is going to be at the Kingston Center as well. Mm-hmm. Just due to spacing issues, there is 100 child maximum, so strongly encourage coming early for that. We did have an advanced ticket sale, but there's still tickets left, but there is only 100 slots. So then Saturday, we move into a jam-packed day. We're starting off with Oceanside Yoga at 8 a.m., a heritage hike at 9, mm-hmm. A horseshoes tournament starting at 10, a children's bike parade starting at 1:30, and then we get into our outdoor concert starting at 5 o'clock.
What's a bike parade?
So actually, we have a girl on our committee. She's from a small community in rural Newfoundland, and she brought that aspect to our festival. It's a whole lot of fun. The kids come with their bikes decorated, their wagons decorated, strollers decorated. They get together, they do a little rally, eat popsicles, and just have a blast.
I think that would be, almost be as much fun as your glow-in-the-dark roller skate party.
We are not having roller skates at the glow dance.
Come on.
That one might be a little tangly, but we are having the kids' dance is a UV glow dance, so that is going to be a whole lot of fun.
Okay. Well, in my mind, you're going to have roller skates there. Because this sounds like, I don't know, when I look at the list of events that you have here, it seems to me that this is a real throwback to the days where families were able to congregate all day long and everybody would be occupied with wonderful things. And that, to me, means the 1970s and 80s when phones weren't in everyone's faces.
Yeah, well, hopefully the only phones that will be out to take pictures. So
wicked. Heritage Hike, that's happening with the East Coast Trail Association. That's a guided hike. So tell me, it seems to be a bit of a long trek from Torbay Beach to Flat Rock Point. Is this manageable for most?
Honestly, it's a beautiful trail. The beginning portion has a couple of stairs, but after you get past Tapper's Cove, it's pretty easy sailing. In comparison to other East Coast Trail hikes that I've done, I consider this one relatively easy. In my opinion, it's definitely accessible.
Okay. My buddy Laurel Ann, who lived here for, over 10 years, is listening in from Ottawa tonight, and she's an avid hiker, and I'm sure she's fondly remembering hiking along Torbay Beach because, it's great. It's a lovely area, and for those who haven't done it, you certainly should. I would suggest, of course, doing it during the day as opposed to during the night because if you're unfamiliar with the terrain, it's best to do it with the sunlight.
Definitely in daylight. And earlier in the morning, I find best for East Coast Trail because it's not as hot
right
during the day.
And there's less humans.
If that's what you're into.
That's what I'm into. Speaking of someone who knows a lot about hanging out with inanimate objects, so you got the teddy bear man himself, Terry Riley, who's going to be there.
So this is we're moving into the Sunday activities now. Mm-hmm. So on Sunday, we have family breakfast hosted by the Torbay Lions Club from 9 to 11 at the Kinson Center. And then we move into Upper Three Corner Pond Park for family fun and entertainment. So Terry Riley is coming on at 12:15. Then we have basically bouncy castles, giant slides, fire trucks, mascots, toddler zone, a reading tent. We even got some of the little race cars from the Avondale Speedway coming in to be on showcase. So we do have something for everyone in there on Sunday.
Sounds like a great time. Kira, I hope that it is a great time in Torbay. It starts on Friday. I'll try and make it down over the weekend if I'm not around the bay. I will be in the Torbay.
Awesome. I'd just like to go back to the outdoor concert for a second.
Sure, bye.
Starts at, like I said, the gates open 5 p.m. on Saturday, July the 15th. So that's this coming Saturday. Advance tickets are on sale until Friday evening at Atlas Pizza and the Torbay Town Hall. And basically it's $15 advance tickets, $20 at the door, and children 12 and under are free.
Thank you for all the information. You can find out more at the old face page, A Time in Torbay. Website, atimeintorbay.ca. Twitter, A Time in Torbay. You guys have that marketing down pat. Good for you.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
A lot of work gone into it, and I'd just like to say thanks to all of our sponsors.
And volunteers.
And volunteers, of course.
All right. Take care now.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you so much, Jonathan. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
What a time that's going to be. Seriously. Atimeintorbay.ca is where you can find it, and there's so many things on the go. You can find advance tickets at Atlas Pizza and Torbay Town Office. Cash only buys. Concert admission price is $20 for adults, $15 in advance. Children under 12 are free. Children who are 12 are also free. And by that, I mean they don't have to pay to get in the concert. Just so there's no confusion. We're going to go to the break early for a minute because we've been late all night. And then we're going to talk to Ernest Decker about the salmon fishery. Stay with you.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to the program, and congratulations to Cindy Casey, who takes home the consolation prize of $110,995 in the Golds. Chase the Hase. There we go. Line number one, Ernest Decker. How you doing, sir?
Not too bad. You, John?
Oh, I'm all right. I sometimes wish I could chase the ace.
Oh, I see. You're right on.
How about you?
Oh, yes, I wouldn't mind. Some nice fellow. A bit of cash. Yes, sir.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes, indeed. Now, we want to talk about the salmon fishery, do we?
Yes, sir. John, I just had the broadcast on there a couple of hours called Fishery Broadcasting.
It's a good program.
And they were talking about the salmon, recreational salmon fishery in Newfoundland, Newfoundland and Labrador, and they're saying, what a guy was on there from DFO, say, well, the stocks is down. They're not near nothing compared to last year going in the rivers, right? So he's going to have to make a decision in a week or so whether he's going to have to close it down or not in Newfoundland.
So are you saying that the salmon is down even further from the numbers that it was last year?
Yes, he's saying it's down big time on all the rivers. That's what he was saying. They're
okay.
On the broadcaster. So I forget, now. I just turned the radio on, just caught, you know, part of the kind of thing.
Okay.
He was a DFO scientist, see? But, and he was saying, you know, maybe or ask the people what do they think of catch and release, right? Well, I don't think very much of catch and release, to tell you the truth, but you know, I think a lot of the salmon goes back in the rivers dead. So
yeah, I mean they're exhausted after that catch or after the race. It's I don't know the idea of catch and release to me is kind of it's painful to the animal.
Yeah, well, if you're going to release them dead or something like that, well, it's kind of defeating the purpose, isn't it? You know what I mean?
What's
the
point?
Salmon fishery, you know, it's all right for the government selling licenses to Americans or whoever, right? They come to open land, but I don't think that's doing very good for the stocks, right? You know, so.
No, and what kind of condition are they in after they're fighting for their life?
Well, some of them are in very poor condition. I've seen them floating down the rivers dead, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but, you know, I don't know, John, if the government's, federal government sees a broad picture of the salmon. You know, we closed on our commercial salmon fishery, I'd say 30, 35 years ago, we?
Yeah.
Here in Newfoundland, all over Newfoundland. So the salmon stocks, you know, they're still in trouble. So, but, you know, do we see the broad picture of Atlantic salmon? I mean, Atlantic salmon has migrated all over the world. I mean, you know, our Iceland and where there's commercial fisheries, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, if there's commercial fisheries in other countries, well, what Newfoundland is doing is defeating the purpose. They're not really doing anything, you know what I mean? They shut down commercial salmon fishery. Now it looks like they're going to shut down a recreational fishery, right? So, but you know, in other countries, there's still commercial fishery. So, I don't know if they know what they're doing or not, right?
Well, it's the question of the fact that we're all connected by that body of water. That doesn't necessarily mean that we share the same ideas as to how many fish we can pull out of the ocean. You're darn right.
That's right.
And, you know, it's kind of like the climate change agreements. If certain countries don't sign on, what's the point for everyone else? Is your political stance enough to make it efficient or worthwhile? And honestly, at the end of it all, does the fish really care?
That's right. Yeah, you know, I mean if you're going to rebuild stock, I think everybody have to come on board, like all countries kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so it's no good for one country to shut down a fishery if the other ones is not, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's only ones to be taking the punishment, Newfoundlanders and such.
Can't disagree with you, sir. Now, what's your favorite way to prepare salmon?
Oh, I don't boiled. I guess it's the best way. Eh?
Oh yeah.
Oh, I'd say boiled. Yeah, I'd say the best way, best for you, right? But I'd say, well, yeah. Well, fried salmon is good to us, but it's all good, eh?
Yeah.
It's all good for you.
I like a bit of boiled, but I like to throw a bit of lemon juice in there.
Oh, do you? Mm-hmm. Always good for you. Well, oh, yeah, right on.
Yep, she's not bad.
Well, yeah, I don't agree with that catch and release. I don't agree with that.
I'm with you. I don't either. I'm not an angler, so I don't get the thrill.
No,
and I'm not saying that I'm not downplaying the thrill either. But
no,
if I was the animal, to me that's just basically bullfighting.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you're catching is kind of like if you're close in a river, it's like you're defeating a purpose. Well, if you're going to catch them after and let them go dead, eh?
Yeah.
That's all very good.
I mean, listen, my opinion is fostered or built on complete ignorance. I've never been an angler. I've never angled. Maybe one day I should, so sure. I can know about what I speak. But the idea that the poor creature at the end of the line, after fighting for its life, is then told, it's okay, I'll just take this piece of metal out of your mouth and you can go on your way.
Yeah,
jeez,
right.
Bye.
Yes, right. But that don't always work, see? That don't, you know, I mean,
no.
They don't always work. They don't always swim away, right?
No.
Oh, very good.
All right. Ernest?
Anyway, Jonathan, nice chatting with you.
Real pleasure, and you made me very hungry.
Oh, very good, sir. Okay, have a good one.
No? And you too. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I suppose I won't win any friends tonight from the hunters and anglers, but there it is, you know. How is it that we can hunt other animals to kill them so we can eat them, but there's this magical thing based on good faith that the salmon will go off and live an all right life after they were struggling for their lives? I don't know. Maybe it makes them stronger. And therefore we get a better product at the end of the day. I don't know. It certainly is a sport. It's a huge sport. And it's a major part of the tourism industry here in Newfoundland and Labrador. But, you know, I don't know. I honestly do put it in the same category as bullfighting. And I'll stand by that until I'm re-educated about something different. And I'm certainly open to any calls to teach me otherwise. And if you want to take me out angling, I'll do that too. We're going to go to line number three, speak with Mark Bradbury of the Easter Seals. How you doing?
Great, Jonathan. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for calling tonight. You reminded me that I need to get some tickets for your lottery.
Absolutely. And if you're going to get them, you might as well get them before this Friday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. It's our early bird deadline is this Friday for the Easter Seals Luxury Cabin Lottery. And if you get your tickets this Friday, you'll also be eligible for winning the trip for two down Sunny South in care of Harvey's Travel.
Well, that's a nice incentive.
It is. It is.
So the Down South package, where are you going down south?
Well, it's whoever wins is their choice, actually. It's,
really?
You can go down for nice island, or you can do a cruise. It's a value of $5,000, and all the bookings and everything taken care of by the professionals at Harvey's Travel.
Okay, so we're not talking Buren. We're talking Florida kind of thing, or Key West. Or
yeah, Jamaica, you know, that sort of thing.
Nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is Buren, of course, but I'm just saying, it might be warmer further south.
Well, you know, Buren's nice this time of year, but if you want to go somewhere maybe nice and hot and warm in March, you might want to, yeah, taking this this great travel option with Harvey's Travel.
That's a great incentive. So if people are gambling in the Goulds for the Chase the Ace, if they're spending their money on 50-50 and tickets to draw that card, they're helping to support the parish out there. If they buy tickets for the Luxury Cabin Home Lottery, where is their money going?
Well, the proceeds are going towards programs and services for persons with disabilities. And there are many programs and services offered by Easter Seals for Newfoundland and Labrador throughout the province and at the Husky Energy Easter Seals House up on Mount Sile Avenue. As well, we've also have a, you might have heard it in the news recently, we did a groundbreaking ceremony, and we're building the first park of its kind, likely east of Montreal, for a the most accessible and inclusive park and playground for all of us here to enjoy in the community. So you can bring in people from all over, persons with disabilities or without disabilities. There'll be all kinds of challenges. It's a complete integrated park for all. And of course, you know, the lottery itself, it's called the Easter Seals Luxury Cabin Lottery, and you can win $500,000 cabin at the Wilds at Salmon Air River. and really come out and enjoy yourself. And it's a beautiful cabin with a grand loft overlooking the great area below. It was 3,000 square feet, like I mentioned. Mm-hmm. Panoramic windows overlooking the Salmon River. And an 8-foot garage door down below to store your toys. And that's just the start of it. There's over 150 prizes. And so there's the choice, Hickman's Automotive Group, choice of one of three trucks, either the Nissan Titan, the Chevrolet Silverado, or the Dodge Ram. And there's also the Freshwater Suzuki's Special Edition 750cc King Quad.
Wow, a quad.
All kinds of prizes.
I mean,
really, really a great lottery, and only for $30. $30, and you go to cabinlottery.ca and go online to buy tickets, and it's the quickest and easiest way to do it.
So what kind of security would I have to get for that quad if I won that? Does it come with a combination lock?
Go to cable lock on the steering wheel or something. Yeah. So it's a great lottery, and it's our second year running. And the 50-50 prize last year was well over $250,000, and it was our first year at it, so we suspect that this year, you know, it's going to be much higher.
Okay, so instead of going to a restaurant this weekend, I should probably invest in my future quad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, you made up my mind. So I got to get this done before Friday, so I'd best hurry up and pay some bills. Because everyone knows, before you gamble, you should make sure all your bills are paid, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cabinlottery.ca. Pick up your tickets, and hopefully you'll win the $500,000 beautiful cabin on at the Wilds at Salmon River.
That's amazing. So this trip down south, is it for two people or is it for just the one?
We've termed it that it's for two. I mean, you can do pretty much what you like with it. I mean, you can have it for four if you like. But it's a maximum value of $5,000.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool.
$5,000 gets you a nice trip away for down south now in next March or April or May.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Mark, thank you for all this information, and thank you for the good work that you do up to the Easter Seals. Any open houses happening over the summer for Easter Seals? Last year you had this wicked old food fest happening there. What's happening over the summer or spring? But fall.
That's right. Yeah, they had the food trucks thing going on. We're going to try to do that. And I think it'll be sometime in late August.
Okay, late August. Excellent. Keep me posted, would you?
Absolutely. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Boy, they do great work at the Easter Seals. And I need a quad, right? I do. I've been told I need a quad. So here's my chance. $30 for a quad. I'm into it. Or, you know, the trip down south, I suppose that wouldn't hurt as well, or either. Jay Oak on Twitter, follow along at VOCM Nightline. He has sent out some great information from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans. Numbers of salmon by rivers. You don't need to be a statistician to read this information, says Jay. It's all there, and I have retweeted it, so if anyone is following me on Twitter, Melanie Kelly, she tells me I'm cracked. Thanks, Mel. Cynthia says that cedar plank salmon rocks the palate. It sure does, Cynthia. You're darn right. I love a good cedar plank, but there's other woods that you can soak as well. If you got a little log of birch kicking around, take off a few junks and throw that in your brine for turkey or even salmon. I tell you, the flavor that comes off that is just amazing. Sheldon, who was a fisher, and I believe Jay is too. Sheldon says the salmon were late coming in the Ragged Harbor River near Musgrave, but they're plentiful now. They would have to be if I caught one. Jay replies that somebody must have left one of the stunned ones for you. The exploits is brutal, he says. I've seen it very bad, but not like this. So some disputes as to whether the numbers are bountiful or just the opposite. There you go. I've never angled for a salmon. How about you, Producer Patrick Myler? Have you done that? No? Okay. Thank you very much, by the way, for your emails, which are flowing into the inbox. I have a recent email here referring to a decision of Justice Orsborn between Lorna Yard and Fraser Paul and the town of Whitless Bay. This is with respect to Fraser Paul being elected as a councillor for the town of Whitless Bay in a by-election in October 2016. Ms. Yard challenged his eligibility to be a candidate, asserting, I'm reading exactly from the public record here, asserting that he had not been a resident of the town for at least 30 days preceding the nomination date and therefore did not satisfy the residency requirements of the Municipal Elections Act. And there it is. So, that's some reading I'll do over the next few days, 56 pages. It's going to be interesting. This went all the way to the Supreme Court of Newfoundland Labrador Trial Division. There it is. So that is fascinating. Of course, you can find the news story relating to this particular event right on our website, vocm.com. We're going to go to the break. I believe we're going to hear from the Nature Conservancy of Canada sometime in the next 20 minutes about something that's happening in Sandy Point this weekend. It's an annual beach sweep, so some of you know all about this because you are a sweeper. But for everyone else, stay where you too. Give me a call.
Call now, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-8626. 1-888-590-VOCM. Nightline will return on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. This is Nightline on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We got lines lit up here like a festive holiday in December. I don't think we're allowed to say Christmas anymore, are we? Just kidding. Merry Christmas. We're going to go to line number one. We're speaking with Megan Lafferty, who is a conservation biologist with the Nature Conservancy of Canada, the Atlantic region. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
I'm good. Can I be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Deadly. All right. Let's get off to another fantastic conversation here. We are not talking about Santa. We are talking about Sandy Point.
Yes. So Sandy Point is an area where the Nature Conservancy of Canada has been working for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And this coming Saturday, July 15th, we're going to be having our fourth annual Sandy Point beach sweep.
Why does it need a beach sweep every year?
Every year marine debris washes up on shore, and yep. So the reason we go out there with our volunteers is to help clear some of that marine debris. And while we have been noticing, decreasing amounts, there is some new debris every year, and we are actually this year going to tackle a new section of the island so we can start making a difference there.
Wow. So I took a bit of debris off a beach last weekend. It was a nice piece of driftwood. I thought it would be super cool for a centerpiece for a dinner party, but not every piece of marine debris is gorgeous. Sometimes it's a bag of Doritos. Sometimes it's pieces of stuff that fall off cruise ships. It's just everywhere. Megan, are we finding more and more of it, or are we just doing a greater job at cleaning it up?
So I think we continue to find a fair amount of it, and we think of marine debris in one sense. We think of the larger pieces of garbage threatening animals due to ingestion or entanglement. But what's also concerning is microplastics, which we might not even see. And so these are plastics that break down and eventually they become so small like grains of rice that we might not see them, but they're still having quite a detrimental effect. So by bringing our volunteers over and cleaning up this garbage before it becomes small, it kind of reduces that threat.
I read a book by Taras Gresko called Bottom Feeders about 8 years ago. It changed the way I eat seafood, and it also changed the way I wash my face because he goes into great detail about microbeads and how they end up being, after you wash your face, so you flush it down the sink, ends up in the harbor or rivers or wherever, and eventually fish eat it because they're just as tiny and good-looking as tiny plankton, for example, and therefore, little fish will eat them, and big fish will eat the little fish, et cetera, et cetera. So you eat the stuff that you wash your face with. Gross.
Absolutely.
That's called bioaccumulation, right?
It is, yes. Yeah. So these plastics especially are tricky because that's kind of like a sponge. They absorb harmful chemicals, and then when an animal eats them, like a seabird or a fish, they're actually released in their digestive system, and you're absolutely right. As it moves up the food chain, yeah. It can bioaccumulate, and we humans tend to end up pretty close to the top of the food chain.
I should hope so. Just under polar bears.
Yeah, exactly.
So this there is a link for registration, conservationvolunteers.ca, but you're already at capacity, yes?
We are. We actually have a couple spots have opened up, so I would encourage people to check out that link. both to get more information about signing up or joining the wait list, and also to see about other events both here in the province and across Canada.
How much, in terms of landmass, does the Nature Conservancy of Canada protect at Sandy Point?
So right now we own about 67 acres of land across Sandy Point, and they're kind of spread out a bit like a jigsaw puzzle because some of the land ownership or history is unknown. So we really kind of treat the island as a whole when we address its conservation, recognizing that animals and wildlife don't see boundaries, and so we kind of treat it as one conservation project.
Yeah, they certainly don't see boundaries. That's something that we sometimes forget. I sometimes forget where Sandy Point is because I'm thinking of Sandy Cove. So that's what, north of Bishop's Falls?
Yeah, it's kind of, if you draw a line down from the Port of Port Peninsula, just before you hit land, you'll hit Sandy Point.
Okay. And is that where you're to now in preparation?
We're actually in the Caudroy Valley this week. We're in a big whirlwind property monitoring tour on the West Coast, but we'll be headed up to the Robinsons area in a couple of days to get ready for the event.
Lovely. Will the food fishery be open?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I haven't checked the date.
Well, maybe you can do a little fish grabbing while you're out there cleaning up the beach.
There you go. Multitask.
Multitask. All right. Thank you, Megan. Good luck. You did send some photos of last year's sweep. Please do the same for the upcoming beach sweep this Saturday. It starts at what, 9 a.m., something uncivilized like that?
It starts at 10:30. We're giving a nice little sweep in, recognizing it's Saturday.
You're very kind. Thank you, and good luck to you.
Thanks so much, Jonathan. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Yeah. Getting up early on the weekend, buzz a buzz. Line number two, we're going to go and speak with Mike. Hi, Mike.
Good night. I was listening to the buddy there talking about the salmon.
Yes.
And I think it's ridiculous when a fellow like that gets on the line talking about seeing salmon floating down the river and all this stuff. That's okay. A pile of crap.
That's a pile of crap, is
I've
it?
Been fishing for over 50 years. And I've always seen one or two dead salmon on a river, and then there was usually marks on them or something wrong with them, or poor, or skinny, or stinky, or whatever.
Yeah.
But we were fishing today. A buddy hooked 11 fish, and I hooked, I don't know, 6 or 7 or something or other.
Okay.
I lost track of them. But this year, the salmon were a little bit late, but not much. But we had this big flood of rain.
Hmm.
And the river rose up, and the salmon were just going right on through. They weren't stopping for nothing. Basically, they're going, not even going on through daytime. And, you know, there was the ice thin that was around all around Wheat Bay and Notre Dame Bay and everything else. We don't know if that probably that slowed the salmon down. I don't know if they'll swim underneath the ice or not or what, or where they'd waited.
It's a tough life, eh? Hey?
So, you know, but anybody can let a salmon go, catch and release a salmon if they're sensible. I saw a fellow dragging my mom over the beach, then we give him a kick back out in the water. Now, you're not going to expect the salmon to live then. Oh, he's going to die anyway, whatever, but not like this.
So I guess, in your opinion, yeah. It's how you treat the fish and how strong the fish is in order for that's it to have a good chance of surviving after you drag it to hell and back.
Well, yeah, but you getting out into the water, you letting go, especially with the barbless hooks. The hook falls out of them anyway.
Yeah.
Most times, all you got to do is let the line slack.
I've heard reports from both sides, and as I say, I'm approaching this from a position of ignorance because I've never angled. But I would say, in defense of the other caller, Mike, he's not necessarily full of crap. He's just had different experiences than you. I mean, you could both be fishing for 30 years and have a complete different experience, no?
Listen, there's no way that he sees salmon floating down the river because of catch and release. I don't believe a word that he's saying.
It's a pretty strong statement.
There's no way. I've been fishing all around this island. I does a lot of fishing. And last year, I caught probably about 30-odd fish. And let them go and that and whatever. And I'm on the rivers and that and stuff around in the pools, and I don't see either dead fish from any that I've ever released. But I don't agree with catch and release now in the meantime.
Why not?
But I catch and release it because I'm not keeping one under 60 centimeters. We won't keep one under 60 centimeters. So, you know, other than I get good fish, I don't take it. But, you know, this stuff is getting on with. Now, getting back to the scientist. That scientist, as far as I'm concerned, he needs to wake up a bit. And if he's talking about closing because of lack of salmon, well, why is there a lack of salmon? If he's a scientist, why isn't he telling us? The worms that we were finding in the fish last year, why can't we get answers of where those worms are coming from?
I've heard some crazy stories about these worms. Are these the worms that will follow your finger?
Yes. I got pictures of them and that and stuff there. The, what do you call it? I brought them into the fisheries and into the food inspection agency and all that stuff.
You're the fellow that called Tim Powers last week about the worms?
Right.
Yeah, that was, you kept me up all night with that story, my son. Frightened to death.
No, I got pictures of them there. I can send you.
Would you? I'd love that.
Yeah, they're stuck. They stick to the rib cage in salmon.
Ooh.
But that's that story that they put on the news.
Yeah,
that was made up of several phone calls that I made in last year and this year, and they made a story out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't just one interview or whatever.
Okay,
I didn't even know it was going to be on. But like I said, there the scientist needs to wake up. We're going to put all of those farm fish around this island. The salmon got to swim by them. The predators, the shark, the tuna fish, everything else is going to be waiting outside these cages with all the smell and debris and everything coming from the salmon. It's going to attract the predators. Now our salmon have got to swim by them. And these worms that you got, they say that the host is the shark the bluefin tuna and that and whatever. Uh-huh. They don't really know. We don't really know if they're going to live in warm-blooded animals.
Right.
I know they'll live outside the salmon for a week. I had them alive for a week outside the fish.
Gross.
But, you know, like, these are the answers that we need from the scientists.
But you're damn right.
Here just come out and say that the rivers are down. Mm-hmm. How do we know that rivers are down? There's rivers there now that there's no way can anybody tell what salmon went up there and they didn't go up there because, and as regards to the high waters that we've had this year, most of the salmon are just, like I said, they're just going on. They're not hanging up at all.
Well, Mike, I could assume that while they don't examine 100% of the rivers, they do examine a certain number, and then they extrapolate by that data, the same way they do when they count fish, where they are to and where they are not, and if populations are up or down. It's overall. But you're right. When it comes to specific areas and you experience a certain rivers because you've been fishing on it, for decades, for as long as I've been alive, say, you would say that the scientist would be full of, you know what, maybe he's full of the worms, he or she.
Well,
I got you.
Well, that's right. No, I can't say that they're like that. Like, they're smart people and that stuff, but you don't have the data. You don't have the... When I went trying, I brought the worm and everything into them. I done everything and trying to get them to look at it, and nobody knew what it was or whatever. Didn't know where it was coming from. You know, they never heard till of it. And I've gone to them about the sea trout and that stuff, whatever, to try to do some research on it, to find out about it. Can't get nothing done. They're just not interested.
Mm.
There's one of the scientists that I found that knows a bit about it, but he's more, I think it's Blackie or something like that, but I think he's tied up with other research that he don't have time to put into this worm business and that and stuff, or what's going on with it.
Yeah.
But, like I said, what species of worm, where it's come from, where they're breeding to, what they're doing, whether they will leave into an animal, whether they're killing the fish or not, you know, we don't know.
I've been trying to get a DFO scientist to come and speak to a couple of issues on this show, so hopefully, cross your fingers for me, buddy. I got one question here. We got a minute left. So I've never angled. I'd like to go out and learn. If not this year, then hopefully next year to see what it's like. What do you suggest for young whippersnappers like myself who don't have any of the tools or any boat or whatever? Should I go to an outfitter to do this for a weekend? What do you think?
Well, what I think is that you need to go somebody who knows what they're doing.
Right.
And it don't matter about if you got a buddy or somebody fishing and that and everything else. There's a lot of knack to it, and keeping your fly straight and keep your fly float. Like, the salmon at different times take the fly differently. Sometimes you only take it on top of the water. Sometimes it's a couple of inches below the water.
Yep.
And right now, what we're finding there this year, we don't see the salmon coming. We hook fish today. They're very hard to hook because you don't see anything, and then you feel the big pluck on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking it below the water, where the water's high and fast. There's a lot of water on the rivers.
Okay.
And it's not something there that you can go and take up and just go out and say, well, I'm going to learn how to do this by reading the book. You know, you got to know the river. You got to know where it flows. You know, the runs. There's an act to it. There's no doubt about it. Like, I don't have any trouble catching fish, but I see a lot of people there, and it's just blind luck if they get the fish.
Right.
But the best way to do it is go with somebody who's got years' experience at it and catching fish.
Okay.
I hear a lot of people talking about this. Paradise, a lot of times, a pile of bull. That's like Buddy was talking about. You see fish floating down the river. For one thing, on most of those rivers, if you've got a salmon that's dead, Buddy, the eels gotten pretty quick and haul down and in around the rocks.
Eels.
And they sink. And they'll sink, too. They're not like a catfish blows up and the belly will come up. If he's dead, he'll sink to the bottom.
Okay.
And it won't be very long before the eels. I've been seeing the salmon here and had eels coming in around my boots.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that one certain species would float and others won't. Mike, we're out of time, but call me back anytime because I learned a lot tonight and I appreciate it very much.
Good enough.
And keep teaching the rest of us what we should know about our cultural practices. I greatly appreciate it, sir. One day I'll see you out on the river.
Yeah, well, one of these times you want to go, give me a call.
Right on.
All right, I'll take you down.
Thanks, Mike. All right. Cheers. Yeah, bye-bye. It's just that easy to make friends on VOCM Nightline, and Patrick Myler and I are ending this evening with a few more. Thank you very much to all who tuned in, and congratulations to the winner of the consolation prize for Chase the Ace. The rest of you will be back next week. Nobody called in to tell me if anyone peed on the side of the road. I can only assume that means that everyone was respectful. On behalf of myself and Patrick, Lila Tove.